You're listening to another inspirational message from Bell Road Church. If you live in the North Phoenix area and are looking for a church community, we'd love to have you join us. It's a great place for the whole family where you can have fun and grow closer to Jesus. For more information, visit us at www.bellroadchurch.com.
Man, why don't you go ahead and have a seat?
Man, that really is my prayer this morning. Your faith would grow and increase. I'm glad you're here. You glad you're here this morning? Good, good. Thank you, sir. Well, I'll just welcome you again to Bell Road Church. My name's Tyrone, by the way, and I'm the pastor here. So glad that you've joined us, especially if you are a guest here with us. Thanks for joining us. We're in the middle of a very fun series. So before we get to that message, I just want to say this. 3 weeks from today, it's March 31st. The significance of that is it's Vision Sunday. This is a big deal for us as a church. I hope that you're here on Vision Sunday in 3 weeks because we have some special surprise announcements that we're going to unveil on that day that you're not going to want to miss. So make sure you're here 3 weeks from today, Vision Sunday, March 31st. Got it? You good? Okay, so let's dive into this message here. We're in the middle of this series, The Problems with Christianity, looking at very popular, prominent questions that people have in regards to Christianity. Things that people would say, this is why I don't believe in God, I don't believe in Jesus, I'm not a Christian because of this. I take issue with this and this and this and this. So it's been a very good study for us. In fact, I love hearing the stories from you about what you're learning and how God is helping you in this, these questions and through this journey as you're studying the book. Man, lots of great stories through all of our life groups and as people are studying the book. It's a great book. And if you don't have one yet, I'd encourage you to get one. Okay, ask me. Feel free to ask me. I'll hook you up with the book. It's only 10 bucks, but it is very, very good. So I'm just enjoying hearing all the stories of people are learning and growing, and they're just loving this study. I'm loving it too. I'm learning new things, so I'm excited as we talk about today's question, as we deal with the topic evolution and creationism. Which should I believe? That's the question. Which one of these should I believe? Evolution or creation? If you're like me, you've struggled with this. I'll never forget in the sixth grade when I'm in science class and I'm learning about how the earth began millions of years ago, and I had a crisis of faith. Okay, I'm a kid who grew up in the church, and I'm thankful for that. So I believed in God even at a young age, believed that he created everything. So I grew up in church learning this. I'm in the sixth grade in science class, and I'm reading and learning something else. And so my science textbook is telling me the earth is millions of years old and probably a big bang caused all of this to take place. And I was like, what? And for me, it was kind of like one of those like, what do I believe? Okay, so it's really the question we're tackling this morning and all this week as we're going to read in our study. So for the, you know, next several years, you know, throughout my schooling career, I remember having these moments of like doubt and wrestle. Have you been there before? It's like, man, and here's why. Evolution is taught with such profound passion that it is truth and fact. And if you don't believe in evolution, you are looked down upon. And so I'm like, I don't believe in it. So like, what does that make me? I feel like I'm a pretty smart and normal person, but I believe in God. And I've encountered him, I've experienced him, so how do I rationalize all of this? And so we're going to have fun exploring this today because this is a very, very important issue for you and I to understand and to be able to talk about. In fact, in our state, in the state of Arizona, this last year, the Department of Education attempted to make a few changes to its science curriculum that really just changed a few words. They didn't try to bring in intelligent design, but they changed a few words to present evolution as kind of a theory, like it may, like natural selection may result from evolution. Something was one of the things they were doing. And so it just poses a theory. Well, wouldn't you know, that caught not just national, but international attention. Our state and the State Department of Education here in Arizona was getting messages from around the world like, how dare you try to lower and dumb your education standards and your science standards? You can't do that. That just totally dumbs it down. And so it was crazy. I don't think any of it got passed, but that took place. That battle took place. Just this last year in our very state. And I think it's safe that we can call this. This is the battle. You feel this? It's a battle between science and religion. And this is the tough one we find ourselves in. If I believe in Jesus and have a faith in that, but I like science. Like, sometimes you feel like I have to pick one or the other. That's kind of how this thing is posed to us, right? In fact, recent Pew Research stats say this: 59% of people in our country believe that science and religion are often in conflict. 59%. So what are those numbers within the church? Within the church, it's 50%. Outside the church, it's 73%. Those who don't attend church believe that science and religion are in conflict. So that means perhaps half of us in this room, half the people listening to this message, are struggling with this. This is a big deal to you. I feel like religion is in conflict with my faith, with this, or science is in conflict with my faith and my religion. And so this is very important for us to study and understand. I really believe with all my heart, guys, that you and I have to have the ability to engage in intelligent conversations in regards to science and theology. I believe this with all my heart. Gone are the days where you and I can say, well, I believe that because the Bible says it. And people are like, I don't care what that book says. That old-fashioned, lame book full of wives' tales, that thing has no application to my life whatsoever. And so we can't start from this position. As important as this book is, as important as it is to believe this book, I can't just start with, I believe in creation because God said it. We have to have other places to start the conversation so we can connect with people right where they're at. And so we've got to be able to have intelligent conversations and engage in this topic. Let's be real, guys. The science world and the scientists have a loud voice in our culture today. Very loud voice. And they preach to a large church, that church, the church of science. You could call it even a religion now, because that's what people, I don't need religion. I have science. That church continues to grow because science has such a loud voice. So it's good for us to take time this week to study, to learn, to embrace this. Because there's a lot of people that might be open to Christianity, but they really struggle with this because they believe in evolution. So their conclusion is, I can't become a Christian because I already believe in evolution. And so they won't even take that step or even explore, because people have presented, again, that evolution is scientific fact. And if you believe it, you're a lesser person. I mean, catch this. Here's a quote by one of the prominent authors of atheism and evolutionism, Richard Dawkins. He says this: it is absolutely safe to say that if you meet somebody who claims to not believe in evolution, that person is ignorant, stupid, or insane, or wicked, but I'd rather not consider that. And this is how you're made to feel if you don't believe in evolution. And a lot of people agree with this guy. Very smart, very brilliant man. He's got a very big pulpit that he preaches to internationally. Okay, so people look at this and say, oh, really? Wow, okay. And so this is what our students, especially in college and university, are being preached constantly. This is why young adults have a crisis of faith, because all of a sudden they enter the halls of academia and university and they're told evolution is a fact. How can you believe in creationism? That's just what old-fashioned people believe. We've already proved that that's not real. We proved evolution. And so we're like, okay. I don't know. We didn't talk about this in church. I'm not ready for this conversation. And it's kind of like we just feel like we're horrible. And then what happens is a major crisis of faith where people begin to say, oh, I guess evolution's true. As we hear things like this, we struggle, we wrestle. Richard Dawkins, he also said this. He said, faith is like a mental illness, a great cop-out, the excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. So here's the generalization. Science is all about evidence and logical, rational thinking. But Christianity, or any religion for that matter, is all about avoiding evidence. It's all about irrational thinking. Okay, that's what people generally think. So in light of that, I'd like to approach this rationally today. I'd like to present evidence in a rational way that points to maybe evolution is still just a theory and not a fact. So let me start with this place right here. As we answer this question, which one should I believe? Both positions require faith. It's important we understand this. And the interesting thing about that is the fact that Richard Dawkins himself would say faith is like a mental illness. So he's saying he has a mental illness himself because he has faith in a position. Both of these, evolution or creation, they both require faith. So that's why I'm asking today, what are you putting your faith in?
What are you putting your trust in? What are you basing your existence and your eternal future in the afterlife on? Where's your faith? Because we have faith in one or the other. Both positions require faith. Evolutionists believe that something came from nothing. And that, my friends, requires a whole heck of a lot of faith. Creationists believe that God created everything as stated in Genesis chapter 1. Evolutionists, they believe in the virgin birth of the universe. Creationists believe in the virgin birth of Jesus, the Son of God. Evolutionists would say nothing plus nothing equals everything. Creationists would say God plus nothing equals everything. So it's a matter of which faith position are you going to choose? Because when you look at it, honestly, they both require faith, don't they? So we have a faith. We have a faith in who God is, and that he is who he says he is. And I love how Hebrews 11 talks about this, the great hall of faith chapter. The first few verses say this: faith shows the reality of what we hope for. It is the evidence of things we cannot see. We're talking about evidence here today. That's what we're going to look at. Faith is evidence that leads us to reality, to what's real. It is the evidence of things we cannot see. It says, verse 2, through their faith, the people in days of old earned a good reputation. I love the NIV says the ancients, I think it is. The ancients. They were commended for their faith. Okay, so I like this. They earned a good reputation. You have a reputation right now based upon your faith or lack of faith, wherever your faith is at. Your faith affects and impacts other people. So verse 3 goes on to say this: by faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command. And that nothing, or is it, sorry, that what we see now, I'm reading from a different translation than what I have memorized, and that always messes me up. What we now see did not come from anything that can be seen, okay? That's the faith. That's the faith that, as believers, we put our trust and our hope into, right there. So some would say, I'm only going to believe where I see the scientific evidence leading me and where history will lead me. That's all I'm going to accept. And a lot of those people would even say, I don't have a bias. It's not based upon assumptions, but the truth is we all do. Yeah. Every single one of us. Your worldview, how you were raised, affects your assumptions. It affects where you want to land in this whole process, okay? We've got to be real and honest with this, okay? Every single one of us, but it's on both sides, okay? Everyone believes in something, and we all make assumptions with our beliefs that can't be proven by science. When you think about it, this is interesting, okay? So think about this. An evolutionist would say, this is all there is to life. Life is all we got. This is it. And so when somebody is experiencing lots of pain and then they die, they pass away, the phrase you would hear often is, well, at least they're not experiencing any more pain. Well, how do you know that? Because you cannot prove that scientifically. It is an assumption based upon an element of faith. Right? Okay, on top of that, to say that I only believe what is proven through science is a conviction that itself cannot be proven by science. So what we're doing is we're philosophizing here, right? You catching this? Science, interestingly enough, has deep roots in philosophy. Because the conclusion that many scientists come to comes from their worldview. It's shaped by their worldview. It's shaped by our assumptions. And so we all have assumptions. That's really where science starts. I assume this is going to happen, so I'm going to test it out. I'm going to test it. Sometimes my assumptions are proved wrong, sometimes they're not. But take, for instance, the Big Bang Theory. In the beginning, scientists rejected the Big Bang Theory. You want to know why? Because it led them too close to the thought of a creator started this all. So scientists found there was a beginning to the universe? Oh, no. Oh, wait. We're going to reject this. We got to figure out how there really wasn't a beginning to the universe. And so Einstein was one of these guys. In fact, he actually put some things out publicly to kind of do a little dance around trying to explain, you know, what he found was a beginning, and he feared it. He didn't like what he found. But then Hubble, through his Hubble telescope, comes to the same conclusion that Einstein feared and basically proved scientifically that there was a beginning to our universe. So it's a scientific fact. The universe had a beginning. So now, obviously, since then, the scientists have embraced the Big Bang, and they got all these theories upon that. They don't want God to be a part of that equation at all, though, still. Based upon an assumption, based upon a worldview that they have. All right, so we can all agree on this, though, because it's scientifically proven. The world, the universe, had a beginning. So the question is, what caused the beginning? In my humble opinion, God makes way more logical sense than nothing. So I just think that's my rational thinking. But a lot of people still don't want to see that. They don't like that idea. In fact, they'll even go on to say, like evolutionists will say, well, this whole God concept is something that you've created in your mind. Your mind has somehow convinced you that God is real. But there's a problem with that. If I can't trust my mind to tell me the truth, then how can I trust their mind to tell me what's true about anything, including evolution? This whole idea of knowing and understanding what is true and what isn't true actually goes against the theory of evolution. It contradicts itself. So if we're, here's the question. If we're a product of evolution, then how did we become rational people who can reason, think, learn, and ponder? How did that naturally evolve? You think about it, like if we evolved from non-matter, non-living matter to living matter and then to what we are, and all of a sudden now we can think, we can rationalize, we can ponder. I mentioned this a few weeks ago when we kicked off the series. The animals are not contemplating their place in the universe right now. They don't have that ability. Your dog is not at home wondering what the meaning of life is right now. That's not where they're at. They don't have that cognitive capacity. They just think, I just want food. When's my master coming home to feed me? I just want food. It's all instinct. It's all survival. And if we evolved from that, then how did we get beyond that into this cognitive ability and this thinking? That's why Mark Clark said this, said, given unguided evolution, it is not likely that creatures such as you and I would ever develop true beliefs. We would only develop beliefs that helped us survive. And if that is true, then we have a reason not to doubt only our belief in God, but to doubt our belief in everything, including naturalism and evolution itself, all of which is a weakness philosophers have pointed out for years. So this is a big problem for atheists and evolutionists. It's a big hole in the theory of evolution. It's a philosophical hole that, like Marcus said, they've been pointing out for years and years and years and years. How on earth did we develop this ability to reason? Is that even possible for that to take place through evolution? And if it is possible, if we did develop this capacity through naturalism and through evolution, can we even trust it? That's why C.S. Lewis said this, said, atheistic man uses his mind to create a worldview that nullifies the use of his mind. And honestly, Darwin himself struggled with this because he knew as he presented and figured out this theory of evolution, he knew where it eventually led. He recognized this. This is his words. He said, within me, the horrid doubt always arises whether the conviction of man's mind, which has been developed from the mind of lower animals, are of any value or at all trustworthy. He knew where this led. So philosophy points to a major hole in evolution. And there's four holes in evolution I want us to look at here this morning. The first one is philosophy. How did we get our cognitive abilities? How did that start? Number two is non-life cannot produce life. Number three is the Cambrian explosion. And number four is the lack of transitional fossils. Okay, so let's look at number two. Non-life cannot produce life. So to help explain this, I got a video I want you to watch. And before we watch the video, let me just set it up. It speaks to that issue. Non-life cannot produce life. But also speaks to this question that is thrown out a lot nowadays of like, if you don't believe in evolution, then you can't be a true scientist. And so they would call people who call themselves creation scientists, you're just a lesser scientist, you're a wannabe scientist. So can you believe in creationism and not evolution, and still be a good scientist? Well, this video actually poses and answers that question as well.
Is evolution a requirement for innovation? In the 19th century, the theory of abiogenesis was widely accepted, much like evolution is today. Charles Darwin strongly promoted this idea that life was generated by non-life. However, Louis Pasteur, a French microbiologist and believer in biblical creation, made a startling discovery. In the early 1860s, he conducted experiments comparing organic material that was directly exposed to air to organic material that was not directly exposed to air. And the result? Nothing grew in the vessels that were not directly exposed to air and airborne microbes. This confirmed biogenesis, meaning life always comes from life. Pasteur declared, "Never will the doctrine of spontaneous generation recover from the mortal blow struck by this simple experiment." His studies led to the practices of sterilization and pasteurization, particularly in the areas of medicine and food preparation. Along with German physician Robert Koch, he shares the title of the father of germ theory and bacteriology, having conducted experiments supporting the theory that germs cause disease. Pasteur went on to research the rabies virus, developing a non-virulent vaccine that in 1885 saved a 9-year-old boy who had been bitten by a rabid dog. And when anthrax was destroying entire flocks of sheep in France, Pasteur successfully vaccinated them against the disease. Must a person believe in evolution to be an innovating scientist? Louis Pasteur's life clearly showed the answer is no. With a known belief in biblical creation, Pasteur was an innovator whose work set the foundation for some of the most important advances in our modern world.
And that's why I pray, God, raise up more Christian scientists. We need more Christian biologists. We need more Christian paleontologists. People with that worldview. We need those having a voice in the public square combating what is coming against us right now. So, interesting stuff stated in that video. Did you catch that? Biogenesis was proved. Life always comes from life. That's what biogenesis is. Life cannot come from non-life. It has to come from life, which is what we've believed all along. There is one who has existed, who always was, who always is, who always will be alive, and he has breathed life into us. We have life because he is alive and has given us life. Life comes from life, which is why I love that Revelation 4 was quoted there. Man, you are worthy, O Lord our God, to receive glory and honor and power. God, you are so worthy, for you created all things, and by your will they were created and have your being. So true. So Pasteur said something very interesting there. Did you catch the statement he said? He said, "Never will the doctrine of spontaneous generation recover from the mortal blow struck by this simple experiment." Spontaneous generation, what is that? It's the process by which organisms develop from non-living matter. That's what spontaneous generation would be. And in order for evolution to work, spontaneous generation has to work. Except for one problem. Spontaneous generation has now been proven false scientifically. It cannot happen. Which is another gaping hole in this whole theory of evolution. Like, evolution can't happen, and it's been proven by science, because spontaneous generation is impossible. But we don't like to talk about that, do we? Number three is the Cambrian explosion. Let's look at that. What's the Cambrian explosion? 541 million years ago, during the Cambrian period, most major animal phyla appeared in the fossil record, including, get this, almost all present animal phyla. 541 million years ago. So what happens is there was a sudden appearance in that Cambrian level of rocks. And the sudden appearance of all these animals, and here was what's interesting, they were very complex. So what's up with the massive amount of animals and instant complexity? Which, by the way, is a lot of stuff that we still see even today. How do you explain that? So you look at the lower level, the pre-Cambrian rock level, you see no traces of transitional fossils. They don't exist. And so how do you explain this explosion? That's why they call it the Cambrian explosion. This evidence right here has caused a lot of people to reject evolution. Like, it doesn't make sense. So scientists have developed lots of theories. This is how the Cambrian explosion could have happened. This is what could happen. But I think that Those who believe in a creator honestly have a better reason for this. Like, oh, the worldwide flood, that's where all those animals got stuck right there. Logically, that makes way more sense than to try to figure out the millions of years and all of that. And then on top of that, you got to, the whole carbon dating system, there's flaws in that as well. We don't like to talk about that. Number four, lack of transitional fossils. The fossil record does not show species gradually transforming from one kind to another. Each kind appears all at once, fully formed. How do you explain that? This is a big issue. Like, we can't find this. All these transitional fossils, and there'd have to be a lot of them, could explain evolution, but they're just not there. This is why one Harvard paleontologist had to admit, and he's actually an atheist too, he said this: the extreme rarity of transitional forms in the fossil record persists as the trade secret of paleontology. The evolutionary trees that adorn our textbooks have data only at the tips and nodes of their branches. The rest is inference. What does that mean? He's saying it's merely speculation. We're looking at this, and then this, and then this, and let's be honest, scientists, we're speculating. That is what he is saying and admitting. So scientists will throw this in the mix. Well, did you know that the DNA between apes and men are 85 to 95% similar? So to them, that's proof of evolution. But the real question is that proof of a common ancestor, or is that proof of a designer? Like, look at this picture right here. We call it similarity of design. So you see the teaspoon and you see the pot. Okay, and you got the whole evolution from teaspoon to pot. And you look at that. Okay, so there's two questions posed here. Does similarity of design prove common ancestor or common designer? Did the pot evolve from the teaspoon is the question that is posed. And so logically, we would look at this and say, designer. Yet we look at the fossil record and so many people are saying, ancestor. And they're posing it as fact with no evidence. Again, guys, this is huge holes in evolutionary theory. And Darwin recognized this himself again. That's why he struggled with this. He called it a theory, says it himself, and speaking to the lack of transitional fossils, he said, the most obvious and gravest objection which can be urged against my theory is that. So I could go on and share lots of other reasons and other holes within the evolutionary theory, but I won't. Just know this. There's a lot of scientists today that are standing up and saying, you know, we need to stand up for truth and we need to be honest. This is just a theory. There's this movement called Dissent from Darwin. You can go to this website, dissentfromdarwin.org. There are over 1,000 credible doctors from all different types of sciences, over 1,000 that have signed this, publicly posted videos, and they all say this in their videos, and they all agree to this. We are skeptical of the claims for the ability of random mutation and natural selection to account for the complexity of life. Careful examination of the evidence for Darwinian theory should be encouraged. They're not saying throw it out. They're just saying, hey, it's a theory. Let's look at this. Let's examine this. We're skeptical. Maybe we should include some other theories into this mix too and not just throw those out. Because again, those are getting thrown out based upon assumptions and worldviews. So these are very educated people that are standing up and saying, we study this, we're in this field, and we actually kind of disagree with some of our own people. Let's be real, Charles Darwin was a brilliant man, very smart, great thinker. You can even see that he had some philosophy in him as he understood where his theory would take him, which is kind of the scary thing. Evolution takes us to a scary place. But Darwin himself recognized it. In fact, did you know the full title of his Origin of the Species? You know how he published this? It's called On the Origin of the Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. That is the full title of what he published. Because he knew where this worldview would take us. It takes us to this place where it's all about favored races and survival of the fittest, and the stronger kills the weaker. This is the mindset and the worldview that we adopt when we believe in this. That's a scary thing, guys. And what's scarier is that Adolf Hitler took it to that extreme. He loved Darwinianism. He loved evolution, and even published in his own book, Mein Kampf, he said this: if nature does not wish that weaker individuals should mate with the stronger, she wishes even less that a superior race should intermingle with an inferior one. Because in such a case, all her efforts throughout hundreds of thousands of years to establish an evolutionary higher stage of being may thus be rendered futile. He who does not wish to fight in this world where permanent struggle is the law of life has not the right to exist. You can see the foundation and the basis of his beliefs and the Nazi Party and why they did what they did. It all had roots in a scary place, guys. It's this thing called Darwinism and evolutionism. It goes to a very scary place. So if this topic is of interest to you, and I pray that it is for all of you by now, I hope I've whetted your appetite enough now that you can talk about this with people, even on the other side, and have not arguments, but good conversations. But if you like this type of stuff, there's a documentary I highly recommend. It's called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed by Ben Stein, the brilliant Ben Stein. This is a great documentary. It came out several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, but it's still good. I'd recommend it. But here's what I would say in conclusion. If you're a believer and you believe in God, you believe he created everything, then I believe wholeheartedly that you have nothing to fear about what the science world would say or publish. I think you and I should embrace science. We don't have to agree with all science, but we should embrace science. They are not at odds with each other. In fact, in a few months, I'm going to talk about the war between faith and science. But today, it's just evolution and creationism. But you got nothing to fear, friends. Nothing scientifically has been proven, has given proof that there isn't a God. Nothing scientifically has been published that says evolution is a fact, although it's preached that way. I've heard out of their mouth people debate this. Well, we know evolution's a fact. I'm like, seriously? How? And then you look at holes like this and you're like, how can you say it's a fact when there are major holes? How do you reconcile this? So they don't care because they have a different worldview. Again, it's all faith. So when someone says evolution is a fact, it simply isn't true. When someone says only ignorant stupid people believe in creationism, that's not true either. Because I believe with all my heart, it makes reasonable, logical sense to believe these words. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God created everything. We can trust those words. Think about the first four words of the Bible. There's so much power in that. In the beginning, God. The Bible never tries to explain God, convince us of God and explain how God got here and all where he came from. And you know, if it did, we wouldn't understand it. Let's be honest. We cannot comprehend anything beyond time and space continuum, anything that's infinite when our brains would explode. A book could not contain that. It would not make sense to us. It's like an amoeba trying to comprehend you. And so there's this assumption from the beginning, he was always there. He's always been there. In the beginning, God. He was there in the beginning, and when he spoke, everything existed. There was nothing, and then there was something. Why? Because God spoke. And you know what's really cool about that is that science, again, has proven there was a beginning to the universe. So we say, Genesis 1:1, God spoke, and something existed from nothing. But do you know how scientists came to that conclusion? It's because the universe is continuing to expand. Even to this day, the universe is growing right now. Galaxies are expanding. What are they expanding into? I don't know. I just think about that, okay? But it continues to expand. So they're seeing. Science is looking at this going, wow, the galaxy is still growing. It had a beginning. So you know what that means? God's words in the beginning were so powerful that they're still reverberating throughout the galaxies, and life is still, things are still being created. Matter is still being created because he spoke in the very beginning. The power of his words are still there now as the universe continues to expand. That's pretty cool and mind-blowing all at the same time. So that's why you and I can trust this book, guys. And when this book says in Ephesians 2, you are God's workmanship, you're his handiwork, you were created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for you to do. Before you were born, God had plans. He had a destiny for you. If God can think all this up and create all this stuff up, then yeah, he can have plans for us before we existed. That is possible. Before you were born, God had a destiny for you. I love that. You can trust him. Our job is to say, God, help me find out what that is. God, what do you want me to do? What do you call me to do? I want to follow you. What are the good things that you have for me, those good works that you prepared for me in advance? Show me what those are. And it takes you and I walking daily in faith. I love the new Passion Translation, and this is what the Passion Translation says. We have become his poetry, a recreated people that will fulfill the destiny he has given each of us. For we are joined to Jesus, the Anointed One. Even before we were born, God planned in advance our destiny and the good works we would do to fulfill it. I love that, the wording of that. It requires faith. That's why I'm praying that God would increase your faith, that you can step into this. You can walk in the destiny. And what does that center around? It centers around this amazing fact and truth that you and I can be in relationship with the Creator. That's your destiny, to be in relationship with the one that created all this, that thought it all up and spoke it into existence. You and I have relationship with him. And everything centers around that place right there. Relationship with God, who isn't just a powerful being, but loves us and wants relationship desperately with us. That's the center of your destiny. That's the center of your calling right there. And I pray that daily you'd walk and live by faith and grow in that relationship with him. So Hebrews 11, we read the first few verses. Verse 6 says this, says, without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So we're going to come to him right now with the belief that he exists. My prayer is that you and I in these last few moments would earnestly seek him. So before we go, guys, let's earnestly seek him. The Bible promises you are rewarded for earnestly seeking him. And so here's the prayer. God, increase my faith. Increase my faith. I hope that all the stuff we've talked about is kind of evidence of like, ah, there's something to what I believe. It makes sense even logically. This isn't blind faith like we've said in the series. This is reasoned faith. It's a reasoned faith. It makes sense. The faith is the evidence that leads us to God is real. Would you stand to your feet? We're going to pray. We're going to worship. Why don't you join me right now in prayer? Lord, we come to you and thank you first that we could wrestle through all these questions. Lord, many of us, we've had doubts. We've worried about this. We've doubted you because of evolution and science and all of this, Lord, and just thankful that we can talk about this and wrestle and bring it all to you. And Lord, I ask that you'd help us, even right now. Lord, I'm praying that doubt is going to diminish and that faith is going to increase right now. A greater faith in who you are. You're igniting that right now. I believe that. In the name of Jesus, by your Spirit, God, you're igniting faith. We're going to walk in faith this week. We're going to walk in faith and not by sight. God, we see you, Lord. You are so real. We encounter you, Lord. These next few moments, we're going to encounter you again. We're going to experience you. And Lord, that's going to elevate and uplift and encourage our faith. Lord, I pray more than anything that we'd be people of faith. A faith in you, not ourselves, not in science. All of this just points to you. It's all about you, Lord. So, Lord, increase our faith. Strengthen it, I pray. Lord, for those that are far from you, maybe don't have a faith in you, maybe today's a day, Lord, you're going to help them. God, they're going to take that step into salvation, into relationship with you, stepping into your kingdom where they can experience your power and your presence. With your eyes closed, I'd love to give you an opportunity. Maybe that's you. You realize, man, I need to come to Jesus and say yes to him and follow him and And here's what it takes. It just takes you and I recognizing we need him. We've sinned. We've rebelled against him. But Jesus paid the penalty of death for us. He took our place in death so that we could be restored in that relationship with him. So you accept that. You ask for forgiveness. You commit to following him. That's where that relationship begins. You step into a relationship with the Creator who loves you, who knows you better than you know yourself. You step into his kingdom and you serve and follow him for the rest of your life. It is the greatest decision you could ever make. Why? Because it lasts for eternity. We're wrestling with things right now that aren't going to matter once we die. This decision right here of committing my life to Jesus, this matters for eternity. So maybe that's you. And if that's you, I'd love for you to slip your hand up. We're going to pray. And just going to encourage you to just pray along with me. Pray a prayer that's going to help you step into relationship with your Creator. Anyone that say, that's me, Tyrone. I need to say yes to Jesus today. Anybody? Maybe you've wandered away. You've drifted away. You've rebelled against God. At one time you were following him, but today's the day to come back. Anybody say, that's me. I'm coming back to Jesus, or for the first time I'm committing my life to him. Thank you. Anybody else? Can you put your hand down? Anybody else? Thank you. Yeah. Anybody else? If this is you, I'd encourage you to pray along with me as I pray these words, pray these prayers. The Bible talks about it. You got to mean it from your heart. Confess it with your mouth. But pray this along with me. Let's pray to Jesus. Jesus, I come to you recognizing that I need you. I ask that you'd forgive me of my sin. I've rebelled against you, but I want to put my faith and trust in you, Jesus. Come into my life. Help me to live for you for the rest of my life. I want to experience that relationship with you now and forevermore. I pray this in faith in you, Jesus. Amen. Amen. Hey, can you give a hand to those that just prayed that prayer right now? Come on.
Again for listening to this message of Bell Road Church. We hope you enjoyed it and that God spoke to you through it. Be sure to connect with us online via Twitter, Facebook, and at bellroadchurch.com.